Rich was ready to, you know, prove he had machismo, and a man of your meant and again talked with him, feeling that perhaps enough years had intervened that perhaps another kind of a talk on perhaps even more basic was indicated. And that's about it as far as the sex education and training. And maybe Fitz growing up in a home where his father and mother were happy, and I mean, recognizing the fact it was more than a surface happiness, and I haven't that in my home. So that was all these influences. Yes.
You have had many sources of fulfillment aside from your family and work. You talked about, I've seen beautiful artwork in your home. When did you start to collect art?
Well, this is where the
connected with traveling.
No, this is connected with Milton. Milton had started collecting legends. They were the ones that up along our stairwell from the first floor to the second floor. He had begun collecting legends while he was still in college. And then when I started going to Milton, the concert of the international we would go to, and you know the exposures, constant exposure to this kind of thing. And we always had things on our walls. Of course, there were reproductions and prints and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And our first oil was the one hanging above the sofa there by Gertrude Janellis Heff. She was the first one called The Island.
Yeah.
And we were on our way to a concert of a Sunday afternoon, and Gertrude was the first one-man show they ever had at the museum. So we stopped in very quickly, you know, to see it. We had the concerts at 3:15, 3:10 concert. So we left, got down through the museum around 2:30, something like that. And we fell in love with it. And we had no more intention about buying anything because this was for millionaires. But the price of that was $150 or $175, I forget which.
Oh, today it
was. And we, at that front time, we thought we could buy it. And you know, it's like being infected with a virus. You just keep going on. And at first we bought just local things because we felt that was all we could afford. But it's like going in the water, you know, you're willing to go deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yes. Yeah.
And your standards are raised, and you find that, maybe you can't afford this and you can't afford that. And we became exposed to so many art shows, and we became practically compulsive buyers. And fortunately, for us, was the fact that our tastes were so mutual.
Yes, that could be a problem.
That's right. So that there was never any question of, well, let's talk it over. Both of us responded immediately to it. Not responded, both of us respond, because it's present tense. To the same kinds of things. I believe that it's the kind of training that I received from Milton, his influences that influenced me. I mean, Milton has always been very contemporary in his interests. Then we gradually began moving out into non-local people, and found out that you didn't have to pay for one thing, for something all at one time, that you could pay it off. So that we gradually bought things. I mean, our first non-local piece was a piece of bronze sculpture by Heim Gross. We go up to Provincetown every year as a result of our friendship with Harold and Stephanie Cohn. Harold, you recall, was the Post-Gazette drama critic.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very close friends of Hein and Marina Gross's. And we became friendly with them the very first year we were up there. And we bought that our first year. No, our second year. We didn't buy it the first year. We bought that our second year.
Did you go to Provincetown for many summers? Was that part of your life?
We've been going there since 1961. And we're leaving there in 3 weeks. We're going leaving here on August the 12th or 13th. But this time we are leaving earlier because we will be stopping to visit Bix and Dale for the couple days in their meeting. So that was the thing that started that out, and Fun was very kind about it, letting us pay it off. And I presume, I think we paid something like $600 or $700 for that, but that's about $2,500 piece. And the same thing was true of a variety
but
of
that was your first non-local.
That was our first non-local. And then this piece of alabaster on the coffee table, that too we purchased in Provincetown. That's by Bernard Simon. Now that's on a fulcrum so that it turns around. And if you notice this as it turns, this is a triangle. And here is this poor sad little one with the unrequited love.
Oh, this is beautiful.
Isn't that an exquisite piece?
Yes.
It's a very tender and loving thing. I think that if you look around at our things, one thing seems to be come through in all of them. There's a quietness about the things that we buy. They're sensitive, I think, and tender. There are very few things that hit you smack in the eye, even this Vassarelli that's behind you. It comes out at you, the fulsomeness, but the colors in it are subtle. And even that Jean Davis that hangs here in the wall.
Yes, it's lovely.
Jean Davis is of the color field of Washington, D.C., and the colors, although vivid, they glow, but they don't hit them in the
eye.
They're calm on this. And the Steinberg, that's a hand-colored print of Saul Steinberg's, that too has a sense of quietude, but also sadness. It reminds me of, did you ever see Sir Ryan's Time of Your Life?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember the scene in the bar? And do you remember this old Arab that stands there? Something all down the line, no good all down the line. I forget the first two words. But this man and standing there at the bar reminds me of that Arab. And then the bartender being strictly a rabbit, you know, and no one looking at each other. Everyone's lonesome.
And yet it has a charm.
I mean,
that's right. It saves it from gloom.
I mean, that's right. But it's a very sensitive kind of thing. So all of these kinds of things
come through. Taste is exquisite. And you're right. Your values and the serenity of your life.
And when I was working, and I'd sometimes come home just beat from emotional fatigue as well as physical fatigue. Perhaps there had been problems with trainees because it was a very emotionally charged agency. And I'd come home literally beaten and whipped, and I would sit over there in that wing chair and just sit and look. And I seemed to find sustenance in that. And the same thing is true of music. Here again was Milton's influence. Although my parents had always loved music, they used to come into the opera when the Metropolitan Opera used to come into Pittsburgh, and Butler, there'd be a Harmony Short Line would be chartered in the carload and come in. But it was really with Milton. He had been a symphony goer. And even before we were married, we would go. And music is like eating olives. the more you eat, the more you the more you understand.
But you had never played an instrument as a child.
Oh, well, we had to take music lessons. But it never took with any of us. But the constant exposure to music with Milton, and I guess I always felt that, well, this is something that Milton likes. And because he likes it, I've got to go. I shouldn't say no. And this has become a very, very important thing in my life. And one of the things that has helped so much in retirement has been WQED-FM. And we turn that on in the morning, and it's on most of the day. So, I mean, when we're in the house. So, but this is all part of it, and of course, the theater. Well, who wouldn't like a theater? There I was exposed to. This came not from Milton. This came from my own home. We used to have a repertory theater in Butler, what they used to call at that time a stock company. And it was the Chester Wallace Stock Company. And Chester Wallace later became the head of the Tech Drama School. But he used to come to Butler, and it was be there for 6 months. And we would go every matinee, every Saturday matinee. This was part of our lives.
Was this from childhood on?
Oh, childhood, oh yes. Yeah. My older sister, my sister Sarah and I. Sarah, poor devil, she always had to schlep me along with her. But every Saturday afternoon we would go to the matinees. And so it was very, very exciting. So that then when I was in college, I went to a couple theaters. As I told you, my life in college was a very non-intellectual kind of a thing. But if, again, here was with Milton, when I started going with Milton, it was a matter of going to the theater. But he didn't have to educate me or develop taste in that. That was something that I loved. And that I had missed saying with the young man whom I went at the time prior to Milton's advent into my life.
Have you and Milton traveled to theater when you go out of town? Do you go to the theater?
Oh, yes. When we used to go to New York for 10 days every Christmas, we would just be steeped in the theater. We would go every night and every matinee, which meant about, they would see as many, sometimes as many as 13 or 14 plays. But of course, there was something to see on Broadway in those days. Today, you're hard put to find anything, if you could even afford it. That time, too, sitting in the balcony was not expensive, and we could afford it. But today, it's you go to a couple things. It's cheaper to go to Europe, even at today's inflated prices, than to go to New York for 10 days.
Yes, talking of Europe, have you and Milton traveled out of the country?
Oh, yes. Milton, of course, has traveled more than I, because he's been to Israel 6 times. I've only been to Israel once. I was never too interested in going, because I was never a non-Zionist or an anti-Zionist. I was just very come see, come saw about it. I'd been turned off, I believe, in Butler by the zealous Zionists, with whom I'd get into terrible arguments, because I felt that one had to pay and be pay as much attention to and be as concerned with social needs in the United States as with Israel. And that the one should not negate the other, but the Zionists felt everything was for Israel.
Well, you and Milton complimented each other there, and after the war, when he was...
Milton was never a political Zionist either. And both of us believed in Israel as a refuge. But I was not, my mother was very steeped in Zionism. Her great desire all her life was to go to Israel. I mean, this was when she was in Europe. My father was interested in it, but he too wasn't as zealous about it as my mother. But Milton went over because of the United Jewish Appeal. He was doing so much speaking for them. And then, I guess it was about 4 years ago, It was in 68. It was the year after the 67 war. Milton was going over, and he asked me to accompany him this time. It was the first time he had asked me to accompany him, and I certainly wasn't going to say no. And I fell madly in love with Israel. I had wanted that we were going to be gone about 2 weeks, and I had wanted us to spend 1 week in Israel and 1 week in England. A friend of ours lives in England, a former Pittsburgher, Howard Bear, who's an artist. Yes. And I wanted to visit Howard and Rosalind. But Milton said, oh, there isn't time. And I thought, you know, on the map, Israel looks about the size of New Jersey, and what can you see? And
how can you spend more than a week?
Jerusalem, old Jerusalem, is just but fantastic. I'm pretty much of a history buff. And to see all of these things, these antiquities, to see the remains of the Crusaders, a fort, see all of the things that have been where Israel has really been a focal point throughout all the civilizations.
Right.
And it's all there. And you can even see it in, for instance, in Haifa, Milton and I were there over a weekend. Our guide had to take that weekend off because he had to take Moshe Dayan and some of the other big wheels around to circle the boundaries, to inspect the boundaries of Israel. So there we were in Haifa, and we took the underground down to the port, and it turned out we see this gunboat there in the harbor, and it turned out that that was the first of the six gunboats to know that they had kidnapped from the French. And then we were exploring around the port, and then we started walking up to our hotel, which was up at the top, and we were using as our guide the dome of the Baha'i Temple and also the Dan Carmel. But as you go, I went up, and you could see the different kinds of architecture, the different kinds of stone showing the various degrees of civilizations and the occupations. And the same thing is true in Jerusalem, where you see this whole thing. And then the various tells, and I'd love to go back to the archaeological digs. Mm-hmm. But it is so exciting, aside from being from the Jewish attitudes that necessarily are involved in one's feeling about it. I can understand why those who have been American Council for Judaism people and very anti-Israel, why when they have been over there, they have come back thoroughly transfigured. Because I know what it did to me, and I certainly was not anti. But now I have become very, very pro. And any little thing affects it. But then as I told you, I was in Germany in 57, and then Milton and I have been to Europe a couple times. We have traveled more there than we have in our own country. Rather, as a couple, Milton has been in, I think, 46 of the 48 states. 52 states of the... No, we have 50 states.
We have 50
46
now.
Of the 50 states of the Union, speaking for the UJA, yes. And I have been traveled a lot throughout the United States, but we have done very little traveling as a couple in the United States. Well, because when would vacation, it was a case of wanting a total rest.
You said you've gone to Provincetown.
We've gone to Provincetown, yes.
And in the earlier years?
When Vix was small, you see, we never felt the need for a vacation. Milton had his tennis. I was away so very, very much. traveling, and Milton traveled so much. I traveled for council, Milton traveled for the UJA, and Vix had his day camps. And in the summer, Milton had his tennis here at home.
Yes.
So that we never really felt the need for a vacation.
Just and since the 60s that you enjoyed Provincetown.
Well, that's only been since I've been working. I had been working at the Guild where I had a definitely strong need for recouping on that, to recoup
myself. What are your plans, yours and Milton's now, in retirement? You've had such a busy and full life.
Well, Milton, of course, hasn't had an opportunity to really test it because he's only been retired for about 2 weeks, and the days have flown for him.
I think they'll continue to fly. I just want to mention you have certain goals that you might never get around to but would like to do.
No, because, I mean, we've had a pretty, if we keep on doing just the same kinds of things we've always done, we have no dreams that haven't been realized, really.
That's a pretty marvelous thing, David.
I mean, we'd like to travel a lot, but of course, whether, I mean, financially we'll be able to, I will probably be able to do some things. One thing retirement is meaning that we no longer can be compulsive buyers, which is just as good, because now we can truly go and enjoy the exhibits without thinking, oh, well, maybe we'll buy that, you know. Now we'll just go and just truly enjoy, which is just as well because we run out of wall space. And I'm not the kind who can store things that out of sight. You buy things because you want to live with them, not for aggrandizement and the hope that someday it's going to go up in the market.
You should just keep enjoying the art shows and the music and the theater.
Well, God willing, we will be able to.
Well, I thank you, Min, for this really marvelous oral history that you've given us of a very full and fulfilling life.
Thank you.
And it will be interesting to compare your mother's story and Dale's when I can speak to her.
I'd love you to speak, because I think even though, Dale, this would not fit into your original purpose of the blood relationship kind of thing, I think that Dale, being a child of our spirit, you might find.
And also a child that you have had contact with since she was 15 years old.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much. Even though you've retired professionally, Min, I met you again after several years at a council meeting. So it seems that you've gone back to some volunteer work.
Well, when I retired, I was very concerned about what I would do. I thought that perhaps the same attitudes that I had about volunteer work, it would be, you know, the same old record again, and that I would become very irritated and again. But I tried it. And I'm finding I've came in with a fresh point of view. I found that the young women who were on the council board, a very exciting and challenging group. I think, although we had had great people in the past, these girls perhaps had a better academic training and were more involved, more personally involved with things and felt things very intensely. It was more than just looking at it for the common good, the spirit that motivated those of my day.
Yes.
But these were the personal involvements on the kind of thing, whether it was in education or social justice. This was a personal involvement. And in politics. I did a stupid thing. I accepted a vice presidency, which was a disastrous thing.
When was this?
Last spring.
So you're now a vice president?
No, I gave it up. It's the first time I've ever resigned from anything before it was, I had fulfilled my commitment. But it was disastrous. I don't think that any president, past president, should commit and be a vice president. That is, if you were of my temperament kind of thing. I do not like being bossed. I do not like tearing out details.
No,
I like to do my own thing.
You should be the administrator.
That's right. And to I was also in a department which I had no competence. I was vice president of publicity and public relations. Now, I can tell other people what to do, and I can be an idea person. But to see that I have to execute it, and the way that had been that year, I was vice presidents in that regime. We're detail people.
Well, that's a lot of detail.
And I mean,
programs,
but instead of I was
printers
a, yeah, I was accustomed, you see, to having committee structure, and it wasn't really good committee structure. And part of that was my own fault. I didn't try hard enough to get chairman, I guess. And
I think you were wise to recognize this wasn't for you.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I can tell other people. I think of ideas, but I was very unhappy with it. And but I loved the board meetings. Of course, I'm ex officio on the board by reason of being a past president. But then I was asked to be chairman of Oral History Project Number 2. And that is really, I'm finding, very interesting and exciting. Now, there are details connected with that, but these are the kind of details that I like. Because I have a feeling of competence and a feeling of interest in the thing.
And I think you will be a super chairman.
Well, I don't know.
Given your own history, you know.
I don't know how super, but I mean, it's something that I'm vitally interested in. And I'm the kind of person that unless I can see where my son gets it. Something that he likes to do, he does well. Something that he's not interested in gets the bare fringes of his interest, and I'm the same way. So, but life is... and another major thing. I learned to play tennis. I, who was always a very, very non-athletic person. I was the kind of person who, in junior high school, when we had gym and had to play volleyball, and they'd select teams, I was always the last one to be selected. Because
I was too.
Even that great big volleyball that I certainly could see, I never could connect with. And I find it a most gratifying thing, the fact that I can coordinate physically and mostly. I always have been a person who worked only with the mouth, and to find that
brain.
I can, and to find that I can do some, that I can occasionally hit that ball back, and that I can run. And
it makes you wonder if you couldn't have done, if you do it now, couldn't you have done it?
It wouldn't have been as meaningful.
No.
It, to me, it is such a satisfying thing that at my age, I'm 65, and that at my age, I can do something of an athletic nature.
Oh, that's marvelous.
My bones have become more elastic. If I'm down on the floor to get something from the lower regions of the kitchen cupboard, I don't need a derrick to pull myself up. I can move up with ease. It's great. That to me is the greatest accomplishment, I think, of anything in my entire life.
Well, and you know it's very becoming. And you say you're 65, but nobody would ever guess it to see you. One more thing before we end. Has Milton seen you play tennis?
Yes.
He's practically a professional.
Well, last year, I had taken lessons, and we up at Provincetown. And it was a disaster. I played on all the six courts, and he was thoroughly disgusted because he came home exhausted from it because he was chasing balls so much. He went out to watch me last week, and he said, you know, you're not bad. And then when we were in Springfield, he again watched me, and he said, you're not bad. So,
that's a great compliment.
So I am very pleased, and he is so delighted. Of course, he's one of the great things about him. He's always taken a great deal of pride in my life.
And he can give you a great compliment by saying, Min, you're not bad.
Right.
On that note, we'll end. Thank you again.